Thanksgiving, Columbus Day, Veterans Day. What happens when the stories behind our holidays don't tell the whole truth? On this edition of Peace Talks Radio, we hear from people working to rename and reclaim these commemorations and why it matters for peace and justice.
Students, often middle school or high school students, who come in and testify and say, I read about this, I learned about this, why are we celebrating Columbus? Like, they're angry.
Columbus Day has been replaced in many communities, but it's not the only holiday people are reframing.
Veterans Day is clearly a recruitment tool, and it asks us not to think critically about what soldiers are actually doing around the world, but just celebrating the idea that they are, quote unquote, serving in the military.
Reframing holidays today on Peace Talks Radio. This is Peace Talks Radio, the radio series and podcast on peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution. Whether it's the search for inner peace, harmony in our closest relationships, or understanding in our workplaces, schools, neighborhoods, and beyond, we explore it here on Peace Talks Radio. From personal moments to global movements, we consider what it takes to build a more peaceful world. I'm Jessica Tickton, today with correspondent Andrew Stelzer. Our days off from school and work are precious, and many of us are so caught up in our daily lives that we don't always stop to consider why we've marked that special date on the calendar. But what we choose to collectively honor and why shape our national and cultural identities. When there are false narratives behind those holidays, it can be hurtful and harmful. Those stories might be covering up painful truths. The holiday names can be used to promote the political agendas of those in power. For this episode, we hear from people working to rename and reclaim several holidays: Thanksgiving, Columbus Day, and Veterans Day. In part two of this episode, we'll talk to Rory Fanning, a former U.S. Army Ranger turned war resister. He's part of a campaign to give Veterans Day back to its pre-1954 name, Armistice Day. But first, in part one, we'll hear about a gathering and ceremony held in Plymouth, Massachusetts, each fourth Thursday of November, the day more popularly known as Thanksgiving. In 1970, the United American Indians of New England declared Thanksgiving Day to be a national day of mourning for Native Americans. Over the years, the day has included protest marches, passionate speeches, arrests, and more, all in an effort to educate the greater public about the true story of how Indigenous people of the region interacted with the so-called Pilgrims and the painful legacy of that relationship. Here's Andrew Stelzer interviewing Matoe Monroe, the co-leader of the United American Indians of New England.
It's important to get one thing clear right from the start. As Matoe Monroe explained to me, the National Day of Mourning isn't the same as the more well-known campaign to rename Columbus Day.
We don't go to towns and ask them to pass resolutions to get rid of Thanksgiving as a holiday. We're not demanding everybody call it National Day of Mourning. We're not, but we feel that it's important to get rid of that false mythology.
Monroe has been helping organize the National Day of Mourning since the 1990s, and she first attended back in the 80s. She says the myth of peaceful pilgrims and Indians sitting down together to a celebratory feast won't just fade away. It has to be replaced with the truth.
The story doesn't start with the pilgrims. There's more than 12,000 years of Wampanoag history prior to the arrival of the Pilgrims.
It's a history Monroe herself has continued to learn and teach over time. When you were growing up, what was your family and community doing and feeling on the fourth Thursday of November? What was that time like? What did that mean?
Well, for my family, everyone appreciated the Thanksgiving aspect of Thanksgiving, that is the idea of giving thanks, because as Native people, we give thanks every day. That's an important part of our lives and of our spiritual practices. There was certainly an idea, though, that the way that the Thanksgiving myth was presented was really problematic for us. I don't think my family knew the exact history at that time, but we did, even as kids, understand that Native people didn't live happily ever after. The whole problem is that the Thanksgiving myth is dishonest, and it does make it seem as though the Pilgrims, who, by the way, weren't even called Pilgrims, landed on Plymouth Rock, which they didn't do. They landed first in Provincetown, by the way. And the rest of the myth is that the Native people welcomed those Pilgrims with open arms and shared a harvest feast. And then we somehow, as the Native people somehow faded into the background, and that's the end of it. It's like we disappeared into the forest or something. And even a long time ago when I was a kid, we felt uncomfortable with that myth because we knew that things could not possibly have been going that well because we were well aware of how settlers have behaved with indigenous peoples for a very long time. And we also knew that we hadn't just faded into the background, that obviously there had to still be Native people around.
And then how over the years did your understanding of Thanksgiving and that time of the year change? And how did your feelings change? What was the evolution?
Well, at a certain point, I started to hear about National Day of Mourning in the sense that it was a day of pride and truth-telling and activism and prayer that was led by Native people in Plymouth who came in from all over to be there at the very first National Day of Mourning in 1970, but to continue it over the years. And I started to learn more about what actually had happened very specifically in Massachusetts, in the Plymouth Plantation, in the various colonies that the English set up within the New England region. And I personally started fasting on Thanksgiving at that time. It wasn't, though, until the 1980s that I started attending National Day of Mourning. And the traditional thing that we did at National Day of Mourning, as it turned out, was to fast during the day. We would start to fast the night before so-called Thanksgiving, and then would fast during the day. And after the speak out was done, we would go and have a social afterwards. I think a lot of people think it's just another protest or just another demonstration, but we're in ceremony all day. We start the ceremony the day before, in fact, with the fasting. So it has significance on a lot of levels.
I'm speaking with Matowi Monroe, the co-leader of the United American Indians of New England. When you got involved in the 1980s, how did you learn about the history of the particular events in Plymouth that had began in 1970? And tell us a little bit about the history of the event.
The first time I went to National Day of Mourning, I went with some people who had been going for years and who had told me about it. And I was really excited to go. And I met Wamsutta Frank James, who was a founder of National Day of Mourning, and got to know him very well over the years. But he had a lot of details about the history that certainly had not been discussed or acknowledged at that point. The 1960s, going into the 1970s, there was a time of what was called the Red Power Movement. And American Indian Movement and many other organizations were protesting police brutality in Native communities. There was an organization here in New England called the Federated Eastern Indian League, which would become later United American Indians of New England, our organization. We came from that organization. There were many organizations and individuals who were being insistent that Indigenous people should no longer be ignored. In some places, such as Massachusetts, it was happening in a state that basically acted as though Native people were all extinct, which was crazy. Wamsutta Frank James said that he and his siblings grew up being told in school that there were no Indians left anymore, even though there they were, and they certainly knew that they were a Quinnawampanoag. So there were all these things happening. And I would say a big spark was in November of 1969, there were about 200 Native people who seized the old penitentiary on Alcatraz Island in San Francisco. And for 19 months, Native people occupied the island to draw attention to the conditions on Indian reservations. And ever since then, they have had un-Thanksgiving Day out at Alcatraz. Here in so-called New England, Wamsutta Frank James was invited by the Commonwealth of Massachusetts to speak at a banquet in 1970, which was to celebrate the 350th anniversary of the arrival of the Pilgrims. The organizers of the banquet thought that he was going to come in and give an appreciative and complimentary speech saying, oh, thank you so much for coming here. And we're such good friends, pilgrims and native people together, do that kind of thing about how wonderful it was that the Pilgrims had come. And I think they thought that he was literally going to thank the Pilgrims for bringing civilization to Wampanoag people. However, the speech that he wrote was not exactly complimentary at all. The state asked for an advance copy of his speech. And when they saw it, they freaked out and told him that he could not deliver it, that that was not okay, that he would have to change it. This is because Wamsutta's speech not only named some of the atrocities by the settlers and reflected upon the treatment of the Wampanoag at the hand of the Pilgrims, but also contained a powerful message of native pride. So the state said the speech was too inflammatory, and they said that he could speak only if he were willing to praise the Pilgrims. The organizers even offered to write a speech for him, to put words in his mouth. And this is something that they wanted him to do that would fit in better with their settler colonial narrative. But Wamsutta was a person of integrity and refused to have those words put into his mouth. His so-called suppressed speech of 1970 was then printed in newspapers across the country, and he and other local Native activists began to plan a protest. The flyer for that first protest in 1970 was circulated among Native people, so people around the country heard about this. And the flyer said, "What do we have to be thankful for? The United American Indians of New England has declared Thanksgiving Day to be a national day of mourning for Native Americans." And so it was a shot that was fired into this, what settler colonialism considers to be this holy, sacred holiday of Thanksgiving that is nothing but lies about how Native people were treated and what happened to Native people after the invasion of Europeans.
And so what happened from there? How did the day evolve, and how did that name, National Day of Mourning, continue to spread?
Sure. So on so-called Thanksgiving Day 1970, Wamsutta and members of at least 25 tribes, not just tribes from this region, but people who came in from other places, as well as non-Native allies, came here to what's called Coles Hill, which is a hill in Plymouth, which overlooks the harbor and is right above where the Plymouth Rock Monument is. And that was the first National Day of Mourning. That first year, Wamsutta didn't get a chance to deliver his suppressed speech, because there was a lot going on. There were up to 200 Native people and allies gathered on that day. They spoke out about the Pilgrim invasion and about the conditions in Indian country to set the record straight about how Native people were actually living. They marched around Plymouth. There's a replica of the Mayflower at the Plymouth waterfront. They boarded the Mayflower too, and they threw the English flag overboard. And they even buried Plymouth Rock. Burying Plymouth Rock was something that we did multiple years, but it started the first year.
What does that mean, you buried it?
Well, Plymouth Rock is not this giant Rock of Gibraltar kind of thing. Plymouth Rock is maybe as big as a dresser drawer, you know. It's not that big. It's not where they landed. And they dragged this rock from the middle of town, and it broke, and they dragged it down and put this kind of cage around it and then built this whole proscenium arch thing over on top of it. So it's always interesting to us when we march in Plymouth every year to see the tourists kind of standing around looking at the rock, looking disappointed, which is an appropriate response to it. But also, we often will we speak to the tourists too. And we're like, hello, tourists. This is maybe not what you were expecting today, but we're here to tell you the truth about Thanksgiving and what really happened here. So a lot of what we're doing is educating. You know, that first day, I would say, blossomed, and the word really spread about what had happened at Plymouth. And so it became an annual event, National Day of Mourning. During the 1970s, our organization, United American Indians of New England, demanded the return of the bones of a Wampanoag girl that were being held by the gravedigger settlers at the Pilgrim Hall Museum, which is in Plymouth. At the fourth National Day of Mourning, Wamsutta and protesters marched into the Pilgrim Hall Museum and took the bones back so that they could receive a proper burial. This was long before the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act. And there's also a plaque that tells the history a little bit about Metacomet, who was the leader of the Wampanoag during the uprising of 1675 through 1676, which is called King Philip's War. We always do give the history of the Thanksgiving myth, and then we talk about why it's false. And we tell the true history of what happened with the arrival of the pilgrims, what happened throughout the years in so-called Massachusetts and New England. We also, though, are not stuck in the past. We talk about what's happening now. We have had speakers from New Zealand and Australia and Ecuador and many from Mexico, certainly from Alaska, you know, at Hawaii. We've had indigenous speakers from all over, but really when they come, they're bringing a message from where they live. They're bringing a message of their own history and of their own community's experience under settler colonialism. And there's an energy from Native people only speaking that day. We only allow Native speakers that day. And the reason is, and this the elders taught us this, they said, non-Native people never listen to us. There has to be one day of the year when they only listen to Native people. The hope is that you feel a lot of strength from being in that crowd and from, I don't know how to explain it, we have a crowd of more than 1,000 people. You can hear a pin drop when people are giving speeches. You can really feel the crowd seeing that they can be in a space together where everybody takes care of each other, everybody feels safe with each other, and people are just listening and learning and thinking about what they can take with them from the day as sustenance to continue the various struggles as we move forward in the next year. And it's the day of the year that I feel the possibility of the future, the possibility that non-Native people can listen to Native people, the possibility that non-Native people can learn and do better and respect what we have to say, and the possibility always of Indigenous unity, of us being able to act together and to create a lot of change together.
You're listening to Peace Talks Radio. I'm Andrew Stelzer, and I'm speaking with Matoi Monroe, the co-leader of the United American Indians of New England. The group helps organize the annual National Day of Mourning in Plymouth, Massachusetts. In 1997, when National Day of Mourning protesters attempted to block the annual Pilgrim's Progress Parade, police used pepper spray on the crowd and arrested 25 people. In the wake of that incident, a legal settlement was reached, dropping charges against most of the protesters, allowing for an annual demonstration, and incorporating Native history into local tourism and education initiatives. The National Day of Mourning continues to be an opportunity to tell the truth about Thanksgiving and reflect on how our society might move forward differently. Now, back to my conversation with Matoi Monroe, where we also discuss the now widespread campaign to abolish Columbus Day and rename it as Indigenous Peoples Day. If Thanksgiving went away in this country through some sort of consensus that name and that whole holiday was no longer appropriate, would there still be a need for a national day of mourning? In other words, if the truth was being told, would this still be necessary?
I think there are a lot of people who understand that the myth of Thanksgiving is false. They may not have all the details, but they know that there's something wrong with it, and they know that it should instead be a day to mourn and honor Indigenous people. There are people all around the country who fast on that day, who may sit down with their families to have a Thanksgiving meal, but read the suppressed speech of Wamsutta Frank James as part of that, or read something else from our organization that is about the Thanksgiving myth and why it's not correct and what actually happened. Kids are taught a lot of stuff in school that's just not true. And what we see all the time is people being furious, actually, non-Native people being furious that they were taught lies when they find out the truth. That's true about Thanksgiving. It's very true about Columbus. And it's true for a lot of other occasions, I would say, as well. And some people, when they get angry, reject it. They can't deal with the truth. And they just cling desperately to the thing that they were taught as kids or what have you. But I think many people are hungry for the truth. And so it's important that we continue to get it out there. We don't go to towns and ask them to pass resolutions to get rid of Thanksgiving as a holiday. I mean, that's not something that we're doing. Trying to undo the mythology is a very hard thing because it's so embedded. Certainly for progressive families in the area, they certainly bring their children very often because they want their children to hear the truth. Their children largely are not hearing about any of this kind of thing in school. Elementary school students in particular are still put through these little drills where half the class dresses up as pilgrims and half the class puts a cardboard feather in their hair and says that they're Indians. And they pretend that they're having this wonderful Thanksgiving meal together. It's very much like with Columbus, too many school children are continuing to be told that Columbus was brave and a fantastic man and discovered America when, of course, nobody invited him and we didn't need to be discovered. But it's along those same lines of taking this colonial holiday and flipping it upside down and saying, this is not what this is about at all.
So it's not really just about a renaming or a reclaiming. I know you've also been involved in campaigns around Columbus Day and renaming that Indigenous Peoples Day. How does it compare or contrast with that campaign, which a lot of listeners are probably maybe more familiar with?
Well, we've been very involved in campaigns to abolish Columbus Day and replace it with Indigenous Peoples Day. And there's more than two dozen cities and towns in Massachusetts that do that now. I would say with that issue, there's always two things to do. One is to explain why Columbus should not be celebrated anymore, why that's just intolerable, why that teaches the wrong thing to children in particular. And we also need to, we always talk about the impact of celebrating Columbus on Native communities and especially on Native children. One of the reasons that I have done that work for many years is because of my own children and the experience they went through at school around being told that they had to sing about how Columbus discovered America for you and me and things like that. You know, a lot of Native parents have deep experience of having to go to the principal's office to have meetings about this sort of nonsense. And then we explain that we want to replace Columbus Day with something positive, though, which is Indigenous Peoples Day, which is very positive. It's really meant to center Native people, especially to center Indigenous peoples and nations from that area where people live, so that settlers learn more about the tribal nations in their area, and also so that it creates employment for Native people as well on Indigenous Peoples Day, because there's always demand for drummers and singers and speakers and what have you, and poets, you know, so all that is good. But, you know, we bring something really positive to replace something that's horrific, celebrating a genocidal monster. That's what they're doing when they celebrate Columbus. Thanksgiving, I would say, we're not against people giving thanks. And we try to make that clear. We give thanks all the time as Native people. We open our day at National Day of Mourning with a prayer ceremony. We close with a prayer ceremony. We give thanks throughout that. So that's very important to us. And we're not against people getting together with their families or chosen families or what have you, and sitting down and having a meal and giving thanks. That's an important thing for everyone to do. What we're saying is it's giving thanks over the bodies of the Indigenous people who were slaughtered as a result of the Pilgrim and other invasions. And it's giving thanks without understanding or acknowledging what the consequences were of the Pilgrim invasion. When the Pilgrims arrived, the first thing that they did was they robbed graves at Corn Hill, Native graves. Then they say that the Wampanoag saved the Pilgrims from starvation. Well, actually, that's true. You're welcome. But the rest of it is not true. But the first actual declaration of Thanksgiving in what is now Massachusetts happened in 1637, many years after the Pilgrims came in 1620. In 1637, there was a declaration to celebrate the massacre of over 700 Pequot Native men, women, and children on the banks of the Mystic River in Connecticut. So this was to celebrate the return of the English soldiers who had gone down there and participated in this massacre. That's what the first Thanksgiving was in Massachusetts.
How does truth-telling, how does understanding our history more accurately make our communities better, make our country better, or make for a more peaceful society? How is that good for us, besides the fact that we know more?
Well, I would say if we understand each other, we can work together better. And so I think anybody who's had the experience in their lives of learning about a different history, of learning about a different culture, it changes you in some way. You can begin to understand other people better. And that's important to be able to do, because I'm not trying to make anybody feel guilty. I'm not saying, oh, you're white and your ancestors did this and you need to walk around feeling guilty. I'm not saying that at all, actually. I'm saying you need to understand this truth and think about what your current role is in this truth, and think about how you benefited from what happened, how you have privilege because of what happened, things like that. You know, if people can have these conversations, I think a lot of change could happen.
That was correspondent Andrew Stelzer speaking with Matoi Monroe, co-leader of the United American Indians of New England. Each year, her group organizes the National Day of Mourning as a counter-narrative to Thanksgiving. You can learn more about that work on their website, and we'll link to it at peacetalksradio.com. You'll also find both parts of this program on our website, along with other episodes we've produced since 2002. There, you can read transcripts, see photos of our guests, and discover much more detail about each show. And if you'd like to help keep these stories of peace and dialogue on the air, there's a donate button waiting for you. It's a simple way to become a peace leader by supporting the nonprofit work we do here at Peace Talks Radio. It's a holiday millions observe, but what if its true meaning has been lost? On the next Peace Talks Radio, we hear the case for reclaiming Veterans Day as Armistice Day. That's next time on Peace Talks Radio.